This is a Fan 590 podcast. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights.
Never seen a moon like this, can you see it too? Night is falling everywhere, rockets hit the fun fest. Satan loves a bomb scare, but won't scare you.
Hey, sexy boots. Get on your boots, yeah.
7 minutes past the hour, it's primetime on the Fan Toronto for Thursday, June 24th, 2010. Bob McCown in the captain's chair. This is a difficult day for those of us at this radio station, especially those of us who have been with this company for an extended period of time and with the Fan since its launch. What are we, in our 18th year now? Something like that. I don't even pay much attention to it. What the hell year did we launch? 92 or 93? I know it was 92. So I guess technically we're coming up on our 19th year? 18 years in September, right? Because we launched in September. Hell, I launched it. 3 o'clock in the afternoon from the Sky Dome Hotel in the midst of the Blue Jays' first run at a World Series. And the truth is, there have been changes, but not dramatic changes, over the course of those years. And I think that is a tribute to the people and to some extent to the... to the managements that we've had, first with Telemedia and now with Rogers, that the companies that have owned this broadcast entity have, for the most part, stuck with the people that have been here. I mean, many people have gone through this place, many of them on to great things. Dan Shulman was doing middays. He was on before me when this station launched. Now, I may have some of the dates a little bit wrong here, but certainly in that time frame. And Dan Shulman, of course, went on to do Blue Jay games on TSN and then ultimately on to ESPN, where he's become one of their preeminent play-by-play guys. Elliot Friedman, who was a gopher around here. You know, a coffee getter, a wire service ripper, and then on to produce, among other things, primetime sports. Produce this very program. I got a chance to do some on-air stuff and has parlayed that into being one of the lead guys on Hockey Night in Canada. And the list goes on and on and on and on of the alumni of this radio station that have gone on. But there's been a core group for many years now that has come into your home on a daily basis. And a significant number of those you will not be hearing again, at least not in the time frame or time slot that you're aware or you've been used to. Today was one of those days in radio. Decisions were made, I'm sure difficult decisions. Maybe not all the right decisions. I'm not sure whether whatever the plan is will work. And my feelings, my sympathies go out to those that were affected today. And it's not an insignificant number, half dozen guys or so were involved in this decision-making process. And others are impacted by it in various ways. And I can speak from experience. This is a company that has fired me twice. This very same company has kicked my sorry ass out the door on two occasions. Now, fortunately, they realized the error of their ways and hired me back. Either they were too stupid to see it through. And who am I to sit here and say that that won't happen with some of these people? I don't even know. But there is no worse day than today. tomorrow will be nominally better. The next day will be a little better still. And as the time passes, it'll become a little clearer. And for these people, the focus will be on their futures. Whatever direction it might take them. I've had the great fortune in the times that I have been fired in every case I took a step backwards to come back but very quickly took two steps forward afterwards. And I'm hopeful that the same will happen for all these people because they are good people. When you work in any company, but certainly in the broadcast industry, we like to think of ourselves much like sports teams as a family. And while, I don't run into the morning guys very often. I'm lucky to have run into Landry or Stelic, two, three times a year. That's probably all it is. But there's an unmistakable bond that exists. A bond because of the history that we've shared and because of the job that we do. And I suspect none of them are listening to this program right now. I can tell you that my response on the occasions where I left a company, willingly or otherwise, it was very, very difficult for a long period of time to go back and either watch in the case of television or listen in the case of radio to the place I was leaving. So I suspect none of them are tuned in right now. But simply for the record, I think we all wish them well. Not just me, but everybody here and all of you that are listening. As I said previously, this was a difficult day. I know that a couple of changes have been announced. A couple of people have been announced as coming here. I don't know anybody. I've not met them. I can't speak to their personalities, to what they will do. I trust that the decisions that were made were calculated and will be wind up being wise decisions, but I can't answer that. So we all go through a period of change. I don't know whether it's been confirmed or not, but it has been reported that this radio program will change its time slot in the next few weeks. Ryan, what's the date? The 19th? July 19th. This program will move from the slot it has been in virtually since the beginning, which is 4 to 7. We will be on from now from 3 until 6. I'm told there will be occasions when between 6 and 7 you'll get a repeat of one of the hours of this program. We will do everything in our power to make it the repeat of the worst hour of this program. Because they're not paying us extra and we're not going to give them anything for free, are we? So, but there'll be other programming on between 6 and 7 leading up to games. I can't tell you what it's going to be because I don't know. But we're going to go from 3 to 6. I'm unconvinced that this is a good idea. It might be, but I don't know. But we're going to try it and see how it works. We'll gauge your response to it. We'll see how the reaction is from the people that are involved in this show. I don't pretend to even understand how this is going to impact on the television coverage of the show. Currently, we are on from 5 to 7. I've not been made aware as to whether is Sportsnet going to reduce the coverage to 1 hour a day? Will they take 4 to 6 live? Will they take 4 to 6 and tape delay it from 4 to 7? I have no idea. There's some speculation that Sportsnet may bring us back onto Sportsnet Ontario in September. But I've had no confirmation of that. I've not heard. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. Hell, they may boot our asses off altogether. In which case, we'll just find someplace else. So this is a day of a day of difficulty. a difficult day for everybody that is here. Not nearly as difficult as it is for those that are leaving us. And again, I say on behalf, I think, of everybody here, we wish them all the best. We thank them for their friendship and for what they have provided to us as listeners. For while the group that's here, assembled here, deliver programming to you on a daily basis, we also listen to the others that do the same. And so all of us will have to make an adjustment. All of us will have to get used to not hearing the familiar voices. Jim Kelly of Sportsnet will join us in just a bit. Stephen Brunn of the Globe and Mail on the excellent adventure in South Africa as that marches on for week number... Is this the end of week two of the World Cup? Week two of 64. Craig Ramsey is the new head coach of the Atlanta Thrashers. New players, new management team, now new head coach, and we'll talk to him. E.J. McGuire is the director of Central Scouting for the National Hockey League. We'll preview tomorrow's NHL draft. The Raptors will make the first of their rebuilding moves, we assume, with the NBA draft tonight. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star will preview that. And now former head coach Ken Hitchcock, one of our friends on this program, will join us. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame crop and about the NHL draft, his memories of past drafts, his involvement, decisions that are made, how many decisions are made on short notice, how many decisions are actually made while sitting at the table during that time period when they say so-and-so is now on the clock. If they take X number of minutes to step up to the podium, is it all show business? Or in how many cases are decisions actually being made at that instant? That's all ahead when Primetime Sports continues. This is The Fan Toronto. Minutes after 4 o'clock, McCown on a radio program. Shannon is wandering around here, aimlessly looking for something to do. Brunt will be with us from South Africa, top of the next hour. Also, Craig Ramsey, the Thrashers head coach. E.J. McGuire, director of Central Scouting for the NHL. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star. Ken Hitchcock, the former NHL coach. Go away, Shannon. Paper. Go away. It's your own paper. Here's Jim Kelly. Hello, Kelly.
Hello, 10.2. How you doing?
It's 10-8.
10-8. Oh, excuse me. Must have gone up since this morning.
No, well, you've been given bad information.
Well, that's often the case, and once you got my sorry backside off your show, I guess you just took off.
Well, I told you that's what would happen. And,
well, you told me that was going to happen, so I got nothing to say.
Where did you get that information, by the way? We're not allowed to talk about it, so we got to talk in clandestine terms here. But
I can't say.
Oh, you can't divulge? Oh, okay.
I can't, you know, at sources.
Oh, okay. Because I didn't see any of that. I didn't know any of that was out there, but...
It's out there, baby. Everything about you is out there.
10-8, baby.
Yeah, nice. Really nice. Unheard of, actually.
As I like to say, on days like that, read any good books lately?
Just remember the little people who helped you on the way up, Robert.
Ah, screw them.
Not that they did you much good, obviously.
Screw them.
Yeah, the hell with it.
What do you make? I've read a couple of pieces on this Hall of Fame suggestion, and let me preface it by saying, when I saw the list, I said, you know, good for them. I don't think anybody deserves to be in the builders category. First of all, secondly, you're not in the builders category, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I don't think anybody deserves. Well, a handful of people deserve to be in the builders category. There's a lot of people in there I like and respect, including Jimmy Devolano, but I don't know what warrants being induced in the builders category. I think it's great they put the two ladies in. And the one guy they put in, I didn't think was ever going to get in, but I'm of the opinion that I don't care what you did off the ice, what'd you do on the ice, and I think he did enough on the ice to warrant being in the Hall of Fame. Now, did they fall short? I don't know, but I was pretty happy with what they did, and yet some people have gone all goofy, as I guess most people are wont to do, suggesting they screwed this thing up, the Hall of Fame Selection Committee. What do you think?
Well, a couple of things. One, I thought they did a superb job with the two women that are going in, Angela James and Cami Granato. For this reason, they have done everything they can do. It's like when Alexander the Great surveys the world and cries because there's no more worlds to conquer. In their field, that's what they did. And when you do that, you go into the Hall of Fame now, look where the bar is that the Hall of Fame has set. You have to equal or surpass what they've done. And that's not the case on the men's side. As we know, on the men's side and the builder's side and virtually everywhere else, there are a lot of people that you could have a pretty good contest to say, let's take these people out of the Hall of Fame.
Right.
So that was superb. I'm with you on the builder's side. There are people who have advanced the game. But I don't think just owning a team qualifies you for that.
You mean Doc Seaman?
What's that?
You mean Doc Seaman? Specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did a wonderful thing for Calgary outside of helping, and there's been enough owners in Calgary to people a couple of teams. And in fact, if you got them all together, I'm sure they'd fire Daryl Sutter. But in this case, what has he done, you know, to advance the game of hockey?
I agree.
That's an argument that goes on quite a bit. On the men's side, I think Joe Nieuwendyk deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I think Joe Nieuwendyk deserves to go in the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. I don't understand the logic of that. And I don't really mind the way it worked out with him and Dino Cicerelli, except to say this. When you have just 18 selectors and you need a supermajority of 14, you can run into problems. Sometimes those problems are good because it's awfully hard now to get in, and that wasn't always the case. But sometimes it does the wrong thing. And what they think the wrong thing here was that Dino Cicerelli is now going into the Hall under the same umbrella, if you will, of greatness that Wayne Gretzky went in, a singular entity going in by itself. This is a guy that the Hall kept out for half a decade, and basically almost a whole decade when you consider he retired in 1999 because of a couple of off-ice infractions. First of all, he was convicted of assault on another hockey player. That's a serious thing. And then there were some personal issues as well. But he is 608 goals. You're a deserving Hall of Famer. I would argue that you either add another guy or woman, which would be a nice touch, or you change the voting just a little bit so that you get a representative of the right thing. I mean, Dino belongs, but so does Joe Nieuwendyk. And for the life of me, I can't understand why he's not there. And I would assume he probably got 13 out of 18 votes. That left him four short. And when you've got just that few, it's easy to put a little click together to deny somebody. I remember when Dale Hawerchuk, who by any standard was a first ballot guy, was denied a year because a lot of people would argue that he was a little too close to ownership, had too many shots that he could call himself, and some hockey people didn't like that. So I think the Hall's moved a great step forward in becoming more difficult to get in, but I still think they could fine-tune their effort a little bit, and that would be a good thing for hockey.
I'm going to marginally disagree with you. Why are you laughing? Because that's unusual?
Well, marginally is a step up for me, because almost every time I'm on, you totally disagree with me.
No, well, I'm not saying that Joe Nieuwendyk isn't worthy of the Hockey Hall of Fame. And I'm not convinced that... I've never been able to subscribe to the notion, as in the Baseball Hall of Fame, that there are degrees of Hall of Famers. Which is to say, there are some guys who get in on the first ballot because they are super-duper stars, and some guys who get in the second or third time and they're just superstars, and then guys get in later who are just stars. And that's really how the Baseball Hall of Fame works. And to some extent, the Football Hall of Fame, the same. I don't particularly like that, but I accept that as a functional reality of those halls. If I put into context where the Hockey Hall of Fame has been, and hopefully their desire to more emulate the other halls of fame rather than to be inclusionary and let everybody in, then I would argue with you that Joe Nieuwendyk is not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Well, I think that's what makes the world go round, Bob.
Right.
And that's the part that your fans enjoy most. Am I right? You know, three Stanley Cups with three different teams. A guy who was always in demand.
Stanley Cup is a team achievement. It's irrelevant to an individual award. If Wayne Gretzky had never...
Stanley Cup, I saw every Stanley Cup this guy won, Bob, and that I could tell you truthfully from my heart and soul and with a lifetime in the hockey business, none of those three teams would have won that cup without Joe Nieuwendyk in their lineup. That's how good, that's how much a difference maker he was.
Well, that's theoretical. You can't prove that.
No, I can't. But I can say I saw it. I witnessed every one of them. I was there for every one of them, and I saw how he played. I can remember sitting in the press box in the last one he won with Dallas and telling my editor sitting next door to who was passing out story assignments. I said, you can do that, and you can do that, and you can do that. But if you don't do a story on Joe Nieuwendyk, who is going to win the Conn Smythe Trophy and be the deciding factor in this series, you're going to make a huge mistake. And that's how much of an impact player he was. And so I'm very comfortable with had he gone in the first. And it's not the end of the world. He'll get there.
Yeah.
But
well, and I agree.
I don't deny that the game is played. That, you know, some people hold back and say, well, he's a Hall of Famer, but he's not going to get my ballot for a first-time Hall of Famer. Because I don't want to put him in that echelon with certain guys, like a Brett Hull, perhaps, or a... go down the list, a Mario, a Wayne, whatever. It happens. Everybody will deny it, but it happens.
Well, okay, we'll agree to disagree. See, if he'd have gotten in on the first ballot, I'd have been fine with it.
Yeah.
I know that Shannon thought he'd probably get on the first ballot.
Yep.
My position is I'm not sure he's a first ballot guy. I think he's maybe a fringe first ballot guy. But then having said that, I have a hard time justifying first ballot guys.
Position before this happened was that if they didn't do it with Nieuwendyk, this would be the year the Hall would have to stand up and say, we've got nobody. I really believe that. This would have been, now how do we justify the gala? How do we justify everything to the corporate sponsors, our fundraisers, and everything else? Because Nieuwendyk would, in my mind, was the guy that allowed them to say, we got a guy.
Yeah, except
and everybody else who comes in along with him would be a B-lister, if you will. And that includes Eric Lindros, but they didn't do that. They went instead with a guy that they've been denying for years and put him in as a standalone. That's, I think, the part that bothers people. Would I have liked to see Pat Burns go in? Yeah, and not because of cancer. I mean, everybody would like to, you know, have an honor while they're still around to enjoy it. But Pat Burns is a winning coach, and his numbers are outstanding. But when you measure it up and you look at Fred Shiro, who is a winning coach, and was one of the great innovators of the game, and he's not in the Hall. I mean, if anything, there's a bias in the Hall. I think it's towards general managers and coaches. They have the most difficult road to get in of virtually anybody on the slate.
Well, and I agree, and I love Pat Burns, and have been a friend of his, albeit an infrequent visitor. We don't see each other very often, but since he was with the Toronto Maple Leafs, so we are now talking nearly 20 years. A great admirer of Pat Burns, a great belief that over a short term, Pat Burns was as good a coach as you could get in the National Hockey League. But I'm not convinced that Pat Burns deserves to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame as a coach. I'm just not convinced of that. I think that there is a level of greatness that Pat Burns did not ultimately achieve. I think when you look at the great coaches in time, Pat probably falls a little short, maybe a little more than a little short of that designation. Having said that, under the circumstances, I wouldn't want to be the guy to deny him entry into the Hall of Fame. It would have been a tremendous honor, and I'm not sure it would have been wrong. But
well,
I can't tell you.
Wins. I always throw out Coach of the Year awards. They're almost a popularity contest.
That's right.
But every team Pat Burns went to, he improved them. He also
won
Pat over
Burns,
500 games.
He had a shelf life.
Got another team to a final.
He had a shelf life, and it was short.
I'll guarantee you this. For all his success, you could argue Scotty Bowman had a short shelf life, jumping around from St. Louis to Montreal to Buffalo to Pittsburgh to Detroit. Coaches all have a short
Yeah, but look life. At his... Scotty Bowman's tenure in virtually every place was longer than Pat Burns' tenure.
Fair enough. I'll grant you that.
You know, Pat Burns was at most three and out, I think, other than Montreal.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right on that one.
You know, I don't have it in front of me, but I think that's right. I don't know how, I don't remember how long he was in Montreal, but I think it was his third season or just the beginning of his fourth that Pat got kicked out of here. And I don't think he lasted that long in any of his other stops.
No, but every coach has a certain thing that he does supremely well. And Pat's was an outstanding motivator. It only works for a short time. You know, a tactician can stay around a whole lot longer. Everything you know to be good in coaching, you can ascribe to Scotty Bowman, which is why he stayed in a lot of places longer than most.
Yeah.
But every coach has certain things that he does well. Pat Burns was, he took teams that weren't good or weren't as good as people would hope they would be and made them better. And I think that's a talent. And I don't think that's
I don't
a
question that,
that
at all.
To be denied.
Look, I don't question that at all. I'm not convinced that it's Hall of Fame talent. That's all I'm saying to you.
Well, that's the beauty of it. And you're right. The Hall came under tremendous fire for this. And I don't necessarily get it because, frankly, I'd want a Hall that wouldn't subscribe to the pressure of a great guy with a serious illness. I want a Hall that says, you know, 10 decades from now, wow, look at that. In 2010, they put Pat Burns in there. That was a good call. And that's what the Hall, I believe, is striving to do. I think they need to work on their tactics a little bit, or if you will, their protocols a little bit.
Yep.
But I'm fine with the people on the committee. Those are good hockey people. They know hockey talent, and they know what wins.
You know, it's a totally different subject. We discussed it yesterday, but I just wish they were a little bit more open with their process. You know, I've always
a little bit of transparency would take a lot of pressure.
Oh my God, yeah. You know, and they claim that they used to be transparent. Jim Gregory was on with us last night and says, "Well, we used to be, and then we got criticized for it, and so we backed off." And I said, "And I'm just sat here and thought, well, I've been around for 35 years. I don't remember when the Hall of Fame was transparent. I can remember I can remember having lots of conversations with Jim Gregory and other people that were on that panel. And when you ask them a fundamental question about what was said in that room, they clammed up.
Right.
They'd
the
never tell you.
Be criticized no matter what they do, Bob.
Of course.
So a little bit of transparency, a little bit. And I'll tell you this. They are protecting the players who didn't get in. I understand that. I think that's fair. But they're also protecting themselves. They don't want to say that, but quite frankly, when you don't have to justify your decision, you've got it made. I know one year I voted for Pat LaFontaine for the Hart Trophy. It was the year that Mario Lemieux came back from cancer and won the scoring crown.
Right.
And my argument was every night Pat LaFontaine was there, and he set up Alex McGillney for the bulk of his 76 goals. Well, it was common knowledge who votes, and I got crucified by a number of people, including people that I worked with my whole career. But I defended my vote. I think being there matters. I think quality people who don't have a long shelf life, that's too bad. You don't get into the Hall of Fame
that's
if you
right.
don't do it consistently over a long number of years. I think those things matter. And, you know, Mario's a great player, and they came back and they fed him the puck countless times. Didn't do him a damn bit of good in the playoffs, but he did get the scoring title that year, but he didn't get a unanimous vote.
We must off. Tempest has fugited, and we always enjoy our conversations. You have yourself a swell weekend, and we'll talk to you hopefully next week.
Enjoy your interview with Craig Ramsey. You'll find him to be one of the most knowledgeable hockey people you'll ever talk with.
No, I've talked to him before. He's a delightful guy.
He's a wonderful guy. It's a good success opportunity for him, and I hope it works out the best. Thanks for having me, and look forward to doing it again.
You've been had, Kelly. Jim Kelly for The Fan and Sportsnet and SI.com and whatever. 17 before the hour on The Fan. Like everything that Sting does, but I like this one. This peppy message in a bottle. SOS to the world. Hi, Shani.
How are you, Robert? You watching soccer?
Was it on? Nah, I wasn't watching it.
I think so.
It might be on, but I'm not watching it. Why would you even ask that? What a stupid thing to ask.
I was shocked.
Well, just because it's
How
on.
How about the tennis? Did you watch the tennis?
Oh, I was on the phone, and I forgot about it, and I turned it on, and they were doing the presentation and interview thing at Center Court. It just finished, 70 to 68, right?
Yeah, 70-68. I thought the NCAA basketball game was better. It wasn't as good as that. Holy smokes.
Holy old bald-headed, yeah. That was pretty good. Damn, I wish I'd watched that last 10-12 games, or whatever it was today.
The Queen...
No, wait, that was more than
the
that.
The Queen showed up after the match started, and she left before it ended today. She was at Wimbledon for at least like
photo op.
18 minutes.
Like photo op.
First time in 33 years and...
She didn't want, she wasn't interested.
She wasn't, well, she was at center court, Bob. Well, she wasn't at court 18.
Yeah, but obviously she wasn't that interested. She didn't stay that long.
I would have been
she's
over
coming to the Queen's Plate, you know that.
I would have been over at court 18. I would have, that was...
Think she'll stay for the race?
Well, she'll have to give out the guineas. They win 50 guineas, don't they?
Is that what it is? 50 guineas?
Yeah, I think so.
Cheap bastards. That's not much, is it?
With exchange?
$1.60?
The bag is worth more.
I don't know what a guinea's worth. A guinea's not a pound, is it?
I think so.
Is a guinea a pound?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
But somebody will email you and tell you, Bob.
Well, then it's worth, like, I don't know.
$100.
Yeah, maybe 100.
Whoa.
Giddy up. I may run myself. Greg Ramsey's going to join us in a bit. Wow. He's got a new gig, got a head coaching gig with the Atlanta Thrashers. That's nice.
Good choice.
It is. E.J. McGuire is the director of scouting for Central Scouting for the National Hockey League. He'll break down the draft for us. Because it's a big secret.
Taylor or Tyler, Bob? Taylor or Tyler?
Taylor
or
Tyler. I think they're both ordinary. Doug Smith on the NBA draft, which goes tonight, and then Ken Hitchcock, just because we like Ken. That's all coming up when Primetime Sports continues. Sadly, Shannon will be back. It's The Fan, Toronto.